In this first podcast, we want to provide you with the history of this ministry. And so let me introduce you to Linda Thomas, formerly Linda Keener, who is the very first director for the memorial and is the current chair of the board of directors. Welcome to the show, Linda.
Thank you, Regina. This is exciting. It's good to be with you all.
So, Linda, now you were there from the very beginning. So why don't you take us back to when the United States Supreme Court codified abortion on demand with their decisions in Roe v. Wade and Doe v. Bolton?
Oh, my. 1973. That goes way back. I was a typical self-absorbed teenager, totally oblivious to what abortion was, and had no idea that that was going to impact my life very significantly in the future.
Okay. So how did you become involved in the pro-life community?
Well, my story is a story from the wall of abortion. As a honor student, 19 years old in college, I chose abortion to cover my sin. And that journey then began a very much downward journey at first, but God brought that back around. And as with many of you, he redeemed that trauma in my life, and I began to become involved in the pro-life community. Actually, back in 81, actually, some people up in Dayton, Tennessee, were starting a pregnancy center, and it was brand new. We didn't know what those were at the time. Mm-hmm. And my mom became involved in that, and as she began to counsel young women considering abortion, she would invite me in and say, "Linda, you need to talk to this young lady. I think you can make a difference in her life."
Mm-hmm.
So pretty much a story of kicking and screaming. God got me involved, and eventually in 84 became a pregnancy center director, and then in 88 became the director of the pregnancy center in Chattanooga.
Okay. Yeah. So now where was the pregnancy center in Chattanooga?
It was across the street from the abortion clinic.
Uh-huh.
So we were on the front lines.
Yes, definitely.
Every week watching women walk in.
Mm-hmm.
And but God consistently brought them across the street. We would have so many that would just walk in and say, "You know, I know this isn't the abortion clinic. I know it's across the street." We weren't deceiving in any way. But they'd say, "But I just felt like I needed to come in here first."
Mm-hmm.
And we saw God just save so many babies and mothers from the trauma of abortion. By being right there on the front lines.
Wonderful. So tell us what happened. How did we end up, the National Memorial, end up purchasing the property that was the former abortion clinic?
Well, it's a story that no one can take credit for but God. It is a God story from beginning to end. We had a lot of people in Chattanooga, caring individuals that were praying out in front of the abortion clinic and were being there as a presence to try to help women make other choices. We had churches that were coming out there on Sunday mornings when it was closed and praying over that property. And God began to move as in a coordinated way as believers in Chattanooga cried out to him to stop the horrible things that were going on there. And the owner of the building, who actually during that period became a believer, ended up from being owning lots and lots of properties to being in bankruptcy court. And one of the properties that the bankruptcy court said that he had to sell was the building that was for 18 years had been the abortion clinic in Chattanooga. Over 36,000 babies had died there. And the abortionist, who was a fellow that flew in from another part of Tennessee, he had a route that he would go around mm-hmm. different cities in the area in his airplane and come in and do abortions for one day a week. He was going to buy the building. And some people found out that was going on and brought it to the Pro-Life Coalition and said, "This is going on." And one of the attorneys said, "Well, let's see if we can put a bid in, an alternate bid in." And we really didn't know. It wasn't a great building, and they were asking a lot for it. And we were like, you know, well, if this abortionist can afford to buy this building, what's going to keep him from just buying another building across town? You know, we kind of went back and forth on whether this was something, but one of the people in that room said, you know, this is just crazy enough that it might be of God. So we better just pray about it and put it out there. And we did. And that was on a Thursday night. By Monday morning, we had $250,000 pledged to putting in an alternate bid and getting that building. And by that next Friday, when we went before the judge, I believe it was 284. I'm not real sure on the exact numbers there, but God had continued. His word just spread that this was a possibility, that we could redeem this ground that for so long had been a place of bloodshed and death. People just wanted to be in on it. And so that next Friday, our attorneys went into the courtroom, and the abortionist, who was very antagonistic, as you can imagine us being there, messing up his plans, he tried to talk the judge into throwing the case out. He said, these people aren't serious. You know, they're just trying to harass me. And the judge said, this is a bankruptcy court. All we're concerned with is getting the most money for the creditors. So we started off bidding in $5,000 increments. And it went back and forth and back and forth. And we had committed, God, you've given us this much money. We're not going over that. We didn't even know we wanted the building yet. And so when we got to that last bid, where if he bid up one more time, we would have been out, he just sat there and threw his papers on the floor and said, to hell with you people, and walked out.
Mm-hmm.
And we owned the building.
Wow. That really is a God story.
It is a God story.
Because he really had no idea how much you guys had.
No idea.
And, oh, man, I love it. I love it.
And the media were all waiting out on the courthouse steps because the word had gotten out that this was going on. And the first question, of course, they asked us is, what are you going to do with this building? And we kind of looked at each other and went, I don't know. What are we going to do with this building?
So what were the next steps in this whole process?
Well, one of the next steps was to redeem this ground where innocent blood had been shed. Mm-hmm. And so we had a citywide, churchwide, we had the Christian radio stations out there with their music and blaring. And we had everybody from the Episcopal guy with his incense to the charismatics. We had everybody out there. The Catholics had been so supportive of this all along.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a thing of unity, of just giving glory to God. And we actually had to break into the building. All the media were there because the abortion clinic people had poured concrete down the drains and painted coat hangers with red paint and had just basically ruined everything they could ruin.
Mm-hmm.
And locked us out. So we had to actually break in. And we took the media in because we wanted them to see. We wanted everyone to see what kind of place this was. And it was a horrible place. It was a horrible place. I've talked with so many women who have had abortions there, and they were not treated with respect, or even medical standards were not being met there. The actual procedure rooms didn't even have sinks in them.
Mm.
You know, it was just substandard in every way. But we had a bulldozer there that day, and as the music was blaring and people were applauding, the bulldozer went through the front wall of part of the building and redeemed that ground for God.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you have the building and you bulldozed the building.
Part of it. Uh-huh.
Okay. So so you bulldozed the building and you still don't know what you're going to do with it, right?
That is true.
So how did you come to decide what to do with it?
Oh, I love this part of the story, too. The next morning, I was across the street as the director of the pregnancy center over there, and we walked over just to look and marvel and pray over it again. And there in the rubble of the brick, a mother had come overnight, and she'd left a little glass with a flower in it and a note to her unborn baby that she had aborted there, asking her baby to forgive her. That moment, the National Memorial for the Unborn was born. Because we knew that this had to be a place where women could have closure, women and men and families could have closure, a place to grieve their children, to find healing, and to give dignity to those children, not only that had been killed there, but nationwide.
Yes. Wonderful. So so you have the building, and so now you have an idea what you're going to be doing with it. So walk us through those steps. I mean, you see that it's been redeemed by the Lord for this purpose. So walk us through those next steps.
We had lots of great plans, and we were praying a lot, and we had some architects work with us. We drew up, at first we were thinking maybe a full-fledged museum mm-hmm. for the unborn. So we had all kinds of architectural things drawn up and ideas. As God kind of refined that, though, the focus became more and more on names, allowing people to give their children names, mm-hmm. and giving them dignity, giving them closure. And so we designed a 50-foot granite wall. It's under the part of the roof that was rebuilt and behind glass doors, so it stays protected. And began inviting anyone nationwide, grandparents, mothers, fathers, even siblings, family members that are grieving over the loss of that child, mm-hmm. to be able to put a small nameplate. The plates have three lines on them, often a name, sometimes a date, a verse, or things like, "I'll hold you in heaven," "please forgive me," "Daddy loves you," "we loved you too late." And we believe that this is the power of the National Memorial, is to give people a view of not only just the grief, but the healing, to give them a different view of abortion, for them to have a window into seeing the pain that abortion causes people.
Mm-hmm. So when you invited people to actually purchase a nameplate for the wall in honor of their child, how many, I mean, at what point, where are we? What year is this?
The buyout happened in 93.
Okay.
By 94, we were doing the construction and beginning to put nameplates up. And we did get a lot of great media attention. I had the privilege of being on with James Dobson on Focus on the Family.
Oh, okay.
We did CBN, Richard Land on the Baptist radio show. So we had a lot of people that were interested in this story because it is such an amazing story.
Yes.
And as we talked about the story, we talked about what we were going to do and inviting people to begin to contact us.
Okay. So we are now here in 2024. Roe v. Wade has been overturned, and we are still honoring children at the National Memorial for the Unborn.
How many years? Amazing.
Yes. So how many nameplates are on the wall currently?
There's over 3,300 on the wall, mm-hmm. And there's actually more children than that represented, because some of the plates actually, one plate represents my 5 babies, mm-hmm. things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So we're getting close to 3,000, I mean almost 4,000 that'll be coming up soon.
Sure.
And to view the wall is just an amazing experience. People come from all over the country. We had a gal from Hawaii here just a couple weeks ago to see her child's plate on the wall, because there's nowhere else that they can publicly honor that child.
Yeah.
So the memorial is the place for them to be able to do that. Although we do have several states that have done affiliate sites so that people locally can do one at the National Wall as well as at one in their own location.
Okay. Yeah, I think there are about 17 affiliate sites right now that I'm aware of. And so that's just a wonderful blessing for those who are in locations where they can't actually come to Chattanooga to see it. So so now that we have the wall of names that runs the length of the building, it's, 50-foot granite wall, we also now have what we call the virtual wall. So tell us about that and how that all came to be.
Oh, Regina, you know that I am so excited about this. This has been a dream of mine for a decade. Because people can't always come, and because the wall of names gives a witness to our culture. It's not just those that have experienced abortion. It's our culture. It puts a new face on it for them to see that people are naming these children and are grieving these children. Just it redefines the dialogue around abortion. And so the virtual wall of names is now officially up, and that is our big exciting announcement. Every name that is on the actual physical granite wall is now on the virtual wall, which is can be accessed through our website. Yes. And it just gives people an opportunity to just scan down through these names and read and hear the hearts of the people. Mm. And that's part of what we want to do on this this podcast as well,
yes,
is to be able to take that emotion and be able to help people see what abortion really does.
Yes.
As well as the hope that is there, because we have millions that are bearing the regret and shame and guilt of an abortion and don't know how to process that. And the memorial and the wall is a first step towards them being able to acknowledge the hurt and to find healing and to have closure. Because Jesus said he came to bring beauty for ashes and joy for mourning. And we believe it.
Yes.
Because we have seen it.
Yes.
He can
indeed.
Do it.
So tell us a little bit about the future goals for the memorial. I mean, we have this site here, and we now have the virtual wall. So what are some of the goals for the National Memorial for the Unborn going forward?
We've kind of been the best kept secret for the last 30 years.
Yes.
So we want to get the word out. We want people to be sharing it, to have it out there. We want to partner. God is doing an amazing work right now in abortion recovery. He is just raising up all kinds of new ministries nationwide, and we want to be able to network with those to provide them the resource that as people do heal, they can become a part and have a place to honor their child at the memorial. So we really feel that God is doing an amazing work, and I believe that there is a harvest field of people that are carrying this weight, isolated, in secret. You know, as much as abortion is on the front page, for most of us, it's still a secret.
Mm-hmm.
And to have a place where that secret can be dealt with and healed. So we want to take this platform nationwide. And why not worldwide, right? If it's
exactly.
on the internet.
Yes.
We do have some international plaques up already.
We sure do.
We want to redefine the dialogue of pro-life in a way, or at least add an aspect to it, not redefine it totally, but to add this aspect and have a physical icon to represent the pain of abortion.
Mm-hmm.
We've said for many, many years, you know, abortion hurts women, and
yes.
it does, and men, and
yes.
families.
And families.
But this is a physical representation of that truth.
Yes.
That we believe can impact our culture.
Yes. Well, and what struck me when I first walked into the memorial in 2020, the summer of 2021, was the fact that when you look at abortion, you those children don't have grave sites. And so this place is a very physical, tangible, visual place where those children can be honored. And so we want that for those who have experienced this grief and this pain, as well as to help them to find that healing that God wants for them, because Christ came to give us life to the full. And when you're carrying that weight and that shame and that guilt, you can't live life to the full.
And it is a felt pain
mm-hmm.
for millions of people.
Yes.
And I'm talking outside of the church here. I'm talking about our society at large. And we have the solution
yes, we do.
For them to deal with that pain.
Yes,
it's interesting, speaking of outside the church, David Kessler, who was Kubler-Ross's partner in defining what grief is, the five steps of grief, has written a book on the sixth step of grief. Which I'm just finishing. It's a fascinating book. And the sixth step, he says, is finding meaning. finding meaning in the grief.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we always stopped at acceptance before.
Right.
But this is a sixth step. He also said in that book something that really hit me. He said, grieving has to be done in community.
Mm-hmm.
That's why we have funerals.
Yes.
That's why we have graveyards.
Yes.
And for those of us that have the loss of abortion, we've never had that before.
Right.
And this is the place in community where we can honor and give dignity to our children.
Yes. And that's why we do what we do. And we have a monthly ceremony. We have a monthly memorial service. And we get a chance to honor children. We just had one last weekend and had an opportunity to honor 8 children that were lost to abortion. And so we know how important that is. And to be able to see the parents place those nameplates on the wall and to talk about their child, it's just, we get to share in the story of their child, as well as to witness that healing that's taking place. And so this is what we want to offer to everyone out there. If you have experienced an abortion, know of someone who has, and you're interested in telling us your story, please contact us. You can reach us by email at office@memorialfortheunborn.org, or you can just visit our website and go to our contact page and send us a message, and we would be more than happy to schedule a time for you to come and tell us your story. So, Linda, thank you so much for being a part of this inaugural podcast where we are telling the stories from the wall.
Stories are powerful.
They are powerful.
They are powerful. Jesus told stories a lot. And we want to let people know not only that with the podcast, not only the plaques on the wall, but the stories behind the wall.
Yes, definitely. So thank you so much for being here. And thank you all for joining us. And once again, if you do have a nameplate on the wall or you have a story and you want to share that story, please contact us. And make sure you visit our website and the virtual wall as well, because you'll get a chance to read the not just the whole stories, but a part of the stories of those that are represented there. Thank you so much. And make sure that you subscribe to our podcast, Stories from the Wall, and like and share.